Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I still think he's the most bizarrely shaped human being on the planet, but he's an amazing wrestler and clearly a pretty cool guy.
What three wrestling matches would you watch if you were stranded on a desert island? This is what I'm asking wrestling's best. In the ring, around the ring, behind the scenes, or behind a microphone. I'm Tom Campbell. Thank you for joining me on Cultaholic Island for another episode of Desert Island Graps.
Hello everyone, my name's Andy Farrance and I'm here to tell you about a brand new website aimed at you, people on the internet who have Xboxes and like videos. Oh, it's Jane Douglas, formerly of GameSpot. Jane, what are you doing here?
I'm here to take online video entertainment in bold new directions for the Xbox community.
Wow, great stuff. And who's this? It's Mike Channel, former deputy editor of OXM. Mike, what are you doing here?
You said you found my dog.
Wow, what a team. We're here to launch a brand new Xbox video site called... Oh, hang on, can you pause it?
So, what are we going to call it?
Outside Xbox?
Yeah, I think we can do a little better than that, Mike.
Outside Xbox?
Yes.
I told you not to film that.
Mike and Andy from Outside Xbox. How are we doing?
My God, the energy. It's
hello.
Amazing.
Straight in there.
Yeah, wow, good.
Hit the entrance music.
Yeah. No, I'm good. Thanks for having us.
Lovely to have you. This is actually a first. This is the first time we've had two people on, a tag team, if you will, on Desert Island Graps. So you've each picked three matches. So we're going to no doubt be trying to speed run this to make sure that we get to everything. But before we get into it, I think for those who aren't familiar with the channel, with what you guys do, I know you sort of came from Inside Xbox, but just tell us how Inside became Outside. For those who don't know.
Okay. Great question. Mike, why don't you answer and I'll think about it.
So what happened was Inside Xbox was obviously a wildly successful on-platform video thing. Andy was very heavily involved with that, obviously part of the core team. Jane and I obviously dropped in every so often as well.
It was a thing on your Xbox where you could watch videos about Xbox games like through your Xbox. It was quite marketing led, but we had fun with it, which people seem to enjoy. So we did that until they didn't want us to do that anymore, and then we sort of set up on our own, which is how Outside Xbox, our now faintly ridiculous name, came to be.
So that was in 2012, basically. So we've been doing it a while.
It's been a good long journey for both of you. So, like, Mike, was there any trepidation about sort of setting away and forging your own path in this region?
100%. Yeah, we had no idea whether it would work or not. So we kind of took the risk and took the jump.
We bet on ourselves in many ways. We're the Cody Rhodes of YouTube video game channels.
As the Cody Rhodes of video game channels. Fortunately for us, we found that audience and the stuff we were making got a really warm reception on YouTube, which was wonderful. And we've been doing it ever since.
Andy, for yourself then, those first few weeks when you started out, you've done the Cody Rhodes, you've bet on yourself. Any regrets, any concerns?
I'm now dressed as an American flag and I'm coming out of my own entrance tunnel.
Have an Xbox tattoo. Just started. Yeah.
Exactly. It was quite daunting at first, because when I was working at Xbox, I didn't actually make videos myself. I was more of a producer. So to become a YouTube creator, I had to learn how to make videos, which was an entirely new skill for me. And I wasn't very good at it for quite a long time. But we've been doing it since 2012 now. So, you know, I'm in a place now where I feel pretty confident in my skills. But at first, I was like, God, am I going to be able to do this? This is really kind of technical work, but we got there in the end. But it was those first few months were quite anxiety inducing, I would
also
say.
You were making videos for like 200 people, which is, you know, at the time lovely. And thank you to those 200 people who've been with us since the start. But yeah, it obviously grows exponentially. And so the nerves are that it will never grow. But actually, we started to get that kind of snowball effect and it really picked up.
Yeah, we started with literally zero subscribers. Yeah. So you're like, hey, nobody, check out this video. Think you'll like it.
Before we dig into your matches for the Desert Island, we've got to touch on the connection between wrestling and video games, because Xbox hasn't had a history that is bathed in glory when it comes to wrestling video games. We all played WWE Raw, and then we all played Raw 2. And it was the one thing that stands out for me for Raw 2 in particular is how do you mispronounce your top wrestler's name?
Who is that? Who did they mispronounce?
It was John Cena, or as he was in Raw 2, John Cena.
From West Newbury, Massachusetts, weighing in at 200 pounds, John Cena.
Oh, wow.
Amazing how you get that so wrong.
Yikes.
But do either of you have a favorite wrestling video game?
Oh, yeah. Like, we talk about this a lot, but like the old N64 ones, like No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000, those were... I imagine if I went back to play them now, they'd be basically unplayable. But like thinking about them with the rose tinted specs, those were, yeah, I spent so much time playing those back in the late 90s.
Yeah, I was more on the PlayStation side. So I started off with Warzone and Attitude, which were pretty clunky, but had amazing customization options. And then SmackDown came along, and all of a sudden it had gone from looking like a sort of house show in a room full of about 10 people to a proper stadium arena. And the specials looked incredible and the character models were amazing. And they did that really innovative thing for the entrances, which was they had the entrance animations, but over the top of the sort of TitanTron video. Mm-hmm. And it just, like, the presentation of that was amazing. The gameplay was so fast and kind of arcadey. And I absolutely loved SmackDown, and particularly SmackDown 2 as well on the PS1, where they started adding kind of table matches and ladder matches and things like that.
SmackDown Here Comes the Pain? Or was that different?
No, Here Comes the Pain was on PS2. And that another like high point in the series where they really got into their stride on that next generation of consoles. And yeah, obviously people absolutely love Here Comes the Pain as well. But, you know, I think... the thing with video games and wrestling is they've always been kind of inextricably linked for me. So my love of wrestling is kind of fed into my love of wrestling video games and vice versa. And so they're always going to be connected in my mind, at least.
So let's get into the matches then. So you've each brought with us three matches to watch whilst metaphorically stranded on a desert island, because we could all do with time away from people. I don't think we've had enough of that in the last 18 months. Right. Mm-hmm. let's do that. So we're going to go back and forth between you both. So Mike, what would you like your first wrestling match to be?
I think my first one's going to have to be the match between the Hardy Boys and the Dudley Boys in the Royal Rumble in 2000. So this is a lot about... you know, my kind of journey as a wrestling fan more than the match, although the match is absolutely incredible. But yeah, it was that era, certainly as a kind of British teenager who didn't have like Sky Sports and couldn't watch a lot of wrestling. The point when Channel 4 started putting the pay-per-views on for a brief period in the year 2000, the Royal Rumble was the kind of first one. They'd been showing Sunday Night Heat, and I've been watching a bit of that and kind of enjoying that, but obviously it's very limited in terms of the roster and so on. And so the Rumble was the real sort of moment where, like, wrestling belonged to me finally, rather than being something I watched at a friend's house or, you know, caught here and there. And that match between the Hardys and the Dudley Boys was incredible. Obviously, Hardys, real innovators in terms of high-flying stuff. Dudley Boys with that kind of extreme legacy from ECW. And it's just that amazing clash between the two of them. And also, you know, I understand it's a kind of gimmick match, and you know, maybe some of the purists aren't so keen on that stuff, but table matches are just great. There's nothing like seeing someone blatted through a table. And obviously the finale of that match, it's not really spoiling it because everyone's seen it, but it's 21 years old. Yeah. Statue of Limitations has expired. But yeah, Jeff Hardy's Swanton Bomb through the table, through Devon Dudley on the table was amazing.
It's one of those matches that you could show to a non-fan to bring them in. Because I know how you say that, oh, people, it's a gimmick match and people sort of push them down. But it's the whole thing that we want to show somebody a wrestling match that is very smash and grab. You know, it's things that you can't take your eyes off. And this is a match that does that. And you mentioned the Channel 4 coverage. We've talked about how Channel 4 got buyer's remorse the moment they aired this pay-per-view, where they went,
I'm sure they did, yeah.
This isn't a family-friendly entertainment program that they said it was. You know, you had women's breasts and swearing constantly. And then it felt nice to watch it on Channel 4, didn't it?
Yeah, at one point JR says we're about to see some erection destruction, and I was like, that's a bit personal, JR. But the entire pay-per-view, yeah, obviously, you know, as a sort of teenager and kind of coming off the back of the Attitude Era and things like that, it was a little bit edgy. There's a lot of stuff that definitely wouldn't fly today, and with good reason. But I was obsessed with the pay-per-view as a whole. That match really, you know, obviously really caught my attention, but I loved Angle versus Taz. Angle getting choked out by Taz and complaining about it being illegal and stuff like that set him up as one of my favorite heels in kind of wrestling. Also the Rumble itself was just an incredible match. You know, Madison Square Garden and the Rock going over the rope but hanging on. What, you know, just that, I've got such fondness for that era. And again, it was tied to, you know, having the video games. It was that same sort of period. And then, you know, shortly after that period, just as the Channel 4 thing was kind of petering out, we got On Digital, which was sort of like Sky, but through the terrestrial digital thing. And then I was able to watch SmackDown in the mornings and stuff. So I've just got such fondness. It was kind of like a real entry point for me. And then kind of my momentum as a wrestling fan took off from there. And then what was sort of heartbreaking was so I've always loved the Hardy Boys and they, you know, their aesthetic and the high flying stuff and the, you know, the physicality. And Andy and I went to SummerSlam back in 2017, and the Hardy Boys were on the pre-show, and we arrived quite early. I thought, you know, we were able to head in and sort of get to our area and stuff. And I get in and there's a match going on, and I realized that it is the Hardy Boys, and they're playing to an empty crowd in as part of the pre-show at SummerSlam in some kind of like nothing tag match.
It was really the Barclays Center, and there was probably maybe 10% of people were already in at the point this match was taking place, but they're like, we've got a schedule, it's happening. So they were just like wrestling their hearts out to no one. It was
And they were doing that thing where they film it all from like ringside rather than from the long shot, so it doesn't look like the entire arena is empty. It was really sad. And that, you know, bear in mind that this was 2017 in July, I guess SummerSlam is it July or August?
August.
A few months earlier in April, the Hardy Boys had come out to the WrestleMania crowd to like the biggest pop I think I've heard at WrestleMania.
Or the surprise return.
The surprise return was only a few months ago. And you know, this is a criticism that is often leveled at WWE. They really didn't know what to do with them after that point. And so they're there opening SummerSlam to an empty crowd. So I had my chance to see the Hardy Boys perform, and it wasn't quite everything I hoped for, but yeah, that match in the Royal Rumble 2000 was incredible.
I would like to point out that your chance to see the Hardy Boys perform was a little disappointing because of that. That was the same pay-per-view where we also saw Shawn Michaels in the ring.
Yes, that was incredible.
But he was dressed as Colonel Sanders for a KFC commercial.
Yeah, he sprinted around the ring.
He did his entrance, he did his poses, and we had no idea what was going on because in the actual arena, they didn't announce, everyone, we're going to film a KFC commercial now while a VT package is playing for the people at home. So we were just watched Colonel Sanders doing all of Shawn Michaels' stuff and later found out it actually was Shawn Michaels had seen him in the ring. But it was just confusing.
I don't know if it's still the case, but it was for some time, like his last in-ring appearance was dressed as Colonel Sanders.
Yeah, he's done stuff since. But
Good. That's good to know.
It wasn't good.
Oh, bless. That's a weird first time seeing as well. Now, Andrew, I know at that show, you got to see some of your Bullet Club boys as well, didn't you? You were hanging out with AJ Styles and Finn Balor, I saw.
Yeah. We were doing our, it was a junket thing for the game. So they had a sort of a press event beforehand where you do the sort of red carpet interviews and stuff. And we were interviewing people about their favorite video games, their favorite wrestling video games from the past. And everyone was giving us the sort of standard answers. They're like, oh, I like WrestleMania 2000. Oh, I like SmackDown. Here Comes the Pain. And then we asked AJ Styles what his favorite wrestling game was. And he was like, oh, Virtual Pro Wrestling 2. It was only available in Japan.
What a boy!
And then he just went into this whole thing about how great it was and how you can't get it over here and you have to get these costly imports and stuff. And we're like,
the deep cut. It was amazing.
Do you want to swap? Do you want to swap places, AJ? Do you want to do these? It seems like you know more about this than we do. Yeah,
it's amazing.
They were great. It was really, really cool to meet those guys. Yeah, AJ particularly.
Andy, what would you your first match? Let's get straight to that. So we've touched on a WrestleMania moment, but I believe yours is a WrestleMania moment as well.
Yeah. So kind of going back to what you were saying about how trying to bring people in who aren't really wrestling fans. Like, I spend a lot of time trying to convince people that pro wrestling is good, actually, which is hard to do because the very best pro wrestling is kind of story based. And you can't just say, watch this match, because you need to have the sort of the build up and you need to know who the characters are. You can't just turn on Raw and say, watch these two guys wrestle. And then there's like 20 minutes of chin locks and everyone gets bored. So the match that I've picked for my first match is it's the WrestleMania 30 main event, which is Daniel Bryan, Randy Orton, and Batista for the world heavyweight title. And I think it's a match that really exemplifies one of the things I think is so unique about pro wrestling, which is that you can create these incredible Cinderella moments that do happen in other sports, but happen so rarely, and you can't engineer it so that they do happen. Whereas pro wrestling, you can engineer these moments for fans that deliver this incredible, like, emotional catharsis that if you're, say, a football fan, for example, you'd only ever have, like, maybe once every 10 years when your team wins the championship. So this, I mean, it's the kind of the famous match where Daniel Bryan, he was going to be added to the main event if he could beat Triple H earlier that night. He beats Triple H, but then Triple H is so angry, he like destroys his arm. And then he's added to the main event. And he's against Randy Orton and Batista, who are two like exemplary professional wrestlers. You know, they're massive guys. They've got their, Randy Orton's covered in skulls and he's got his entrance song, which is about how he's a snake, and Batista's coming down and he's machine gunning everyone. And, you know, they're massive, terrifying pro wrestlers. And Daniel Bryan is this sort of little beardy vegan dude who just everyone loves because he's great. But he's, you know, very much the underdog in this situation. And also now he's got a completely destroyed arm. He can't even do the yes chant with both of his arms as he's coming to the ring. So it's set up as this total underdog situation. But the thing with the match is that it's so emotionally satisfying because Daniel Bryan just refuses to give up throughout the entire match. He's getting the beating of his life and everything's against him. At one point, Triple H and Stephanie come down. They pull the referee out of the ring when he's got a submission locked on. And then Randy Orton and Batista are like, we've had enough of this annoying little guy in our match. Let's just kill him so we can have our proper match. So they do a combination RKO, Batista bomb through a table. They put Bryan on a stretcher and they're taking him out. He's in a neck brace, but he sort of weakly fights out of the neck brace and crawls back up to the ring. And then, of course, you get the incredible finish where, after being dead for most of the match, Randy Orton gets Batista bombed. Daniel Bryan comes in with the flying knee and locks in the yes lock. And then Batista taps out. And I've never heard a crowd just lose their minds with excitement as they did when Daniel Bryan wins this match. The roof basically comes off the place, and it's the most kind of emotionally satisfying resolution to this story arc that's been going on for ages, and that you don't really see that kind of thing in any other sports. Like, you know, we've just had the Euro Championships, and there you're watching the final going, oh, it would be amazing if England were to win. You've got this like young team. They all seem like really good guys. Wouldn't it be incredible if they win? And then they lost on penalties and you go, well, that was disappointing. And that's not the kind of,
that's awful booking.
Terrible booking, right?
It's not delivering.
Denmark break their arms before the final.
It's not delivering on the, it's not delivering the emotional payoff that people want to see. But
actually, I think
professional
Denmark
wrestling
probably would
that.
Have been a better win, to be honest. Like, Denmark had the. I remember when Denmark and England sized up for the semis, and I was just kind of like, the Denmark winning, that guy had a heart attack on the pitch. That's
yeah,
a, be- that's
the,
a better
that's story.
Yeah,
it is. It's like, do it for him, and then they could win, and you know, the place would erupt, and he would kind of come out onto the ramp, and he'd be clapping with tears in his eyes, and they'd all be like pointing and saying, "This is for you, man," and it would be emotionally satisfying.
This is why pro wrestling is great. But I would say, maybe I'm being unfair, but I see this match as a very like un-Vince sort of moment. It's like the least Vince.
Yeah,
moment.
Because you mentioned about how
being in two very Vince guys. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, you mentioned about how like the wrestling's so great for things being engineered, but I think the Daniel Bryan thing was something that was very not engineered.
It was organic, wasn't it?
Company having to acquiesce to the fans because otherwise they were just going to ruin the main event. And you know what? Rightly so. They recognized that, like, no matter what they did to try and push the issue away, Daniel Bryan's passion wasn't dying. And they're like, we just have, and because it was only because it was so close to WrestleMania before they pulled the trigger on it that made me go, I don't know if this was ever their plan. And forever they'll say, well, we made a moment and all this, and they'll own it. I genuinely don't think they wanted that at all. I don't think they did. And then it annoyed them and they had to acquiesce because otherwise it would have been a horrible night at WrestleMania.
Absolutely. You look at Daniel Bryan next to Batista and Randy Orton. You're like, I think it's clear who Vince McMahon would like to be his champion.
Yeah.
But you just make it so that they can't do anything else because otherwise the fans are going to riot.
But I think the fans were, I think part of the reason the reaction is so huge and heartfelt is that I think in the back of their minds the fans thought it still wouldn't happen. You know, they weren't convinced the WWE would ever
they didn't
go
have
for this.
The faith in WWE to actually give them what they wanted.
So when it actually happened, you know, everyone erupts, obviously. I do want to say a word for Randy Orton, who back in, you know, during the Batista bomb and the RKO through the table, I don't know if you noticed, but Randy Orton lands on one of those horrible boxes.
Oh, yeah, he lands
monitors.
On a monitor right in the corner.
That they insisted on still using in, 2014 or whatever it was. And if you look at it, it's bent. It's literally bent by, like, Randy Orton landing on top of it. He's, like, bleeding and stuff like that. And you could tell there's a couple of, like, real, like, reactions to that pain in there. But,
I think Randy Orton gets a bad rap. I think he's a really good professional wrestler.
He's good, yeah.
And Batista as well. Obviously, Batista's amazing. So it's like three really good professional wrestlers. It's a great match, and it's got like an emotional payoff that I've not seen ever. Yeah. It's great.
So let's move back to Mike for your second match then. We've had a classic from 21 years ago that we've now spoiled the ending of.
Yeah, I know. Spoiled the ending of another
one. I bet the Titanic drown sinks as well.
I was going to watch that tonight. Damn it.
Oh, no. It's livid. They sing and they can't get on the board. Mike, what's your second match, sir?
This is probably my controversial one. I'm sure others have picked it before as well, but I love Will Ospreay versus Ricochet back in 2016, the match that angered, I think, a lot of wrestling fans and wrestlers. But I love it personally. I think it's really, really good. I will concede there's some kind of goofy stuff in there, but basically, if you don't know the background of the match, obviously it's over in Japan. It's a tournament, a sort of juniors tournament over in Japan, and Will Ospreay is a Brit. Ricochet is now of sort of WWE NXT main roster now.
Regrettably,
it's like an anime wrestling match. Basically, it's got all these acrobatics, all this high flying stuff. And I will concede that there is some like kind of goofy stuff in there. There's the bit where they do the kind of synchronized backflips and land in a kind of like superhero pose, which is pretty silly. There's some fairly strange like submission holds and things going on. And there is there's a count out that goes to like 19 3/4, and then they both dive back into the ring. But otherwise, like, if you look at it as a match, I think it's actually just a really, really good wrestling match. The pace never lets up. The athleticism is unreal, and there's just a sort of fluidity to it that clearly comes from you know, a lot of communication between the two of them, and also a lot of rehearsal of those spots, because it is an absolute spot fest. The fluidity just blows my mind. There's a moment that's not even one of the highlights of the match, really, but like Ospreay leaps in and Ricochet catches him and immediately flows it straight into a tilt-a-whirl backbreaker, and I'm like, that level of communication and fluidity is just not something you see that often in wrestling. And I think what the other thing I would say about that match is that there are so many reversals as well. And I think it's hard enough to get that flow with, you know, moves being executed in their entirety, to have, you know, good looking reversals that don't look totally pony as well is another level of complexity. So it's so high flying, so acrobatic. Ricochet does a double somersault senton off the top rope. It's so cool. And I think it got a lot of stick, but actually if you go back and watch it, it's not quite as extreme as you remember it. Maybe there's, like I said, there's a couple of goofy moments, but otherwise it's just a really, really good, you know, high flying wrestling match. I would argue that like it's less weird in like retrospect now than, say, you know, the Styles Taker thing at WrestleMania last year, which was like filmed in a, you know, a graveyard or whatever, junkyard. I think it's less of a departure from what people would expect from wrestling than that. And I obviously understand the circumstances around that. But also what I would say is that, you know, this is a match that I don't think was ever really intended to blow up as much as it did. It was never really intended for anything other than a Japanese audience. And I think the reason it did blow up and the reason it attracted the controversy is that it was such a good match. It did actually escape that sort of Japanese wrestling bubble. And that's because it's a really, really good match.
I think like a lot of the people who criticized it, I think have like a very specific vision of what pro wrestling is. It's like, if it isn't this, it's not pro wrestling. And generally that's a kind of an old school mentality, where it's like the pro wrestling that I enjoyed in the 70s and 80s, that's pro wrestling. Whereas I think there are definitely different genres of professional wrestling. And this was a pro wrestling match, which was like, look at what we can do, basically. Mm. I think the big sticking point for a lot of people was the obvious cooperation between the wrestlers, which is something that you would never get in the old days of professional wrestling. But you can watch that and you can appreciate the technical mastery of the art form of professional wrestling and still say this is a good professional wrestling match, I think.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, like, you see cooperation, you see that cooperation all the time. If you're a longtime wrestling fan, you do see that cooperation, maybe not so much within a single match, but it's spectacular. And like you say, Andy, I think it's that thing of the thing for me, and all my picks are sort of, you know, points on my kind of journey as a wrestling fan. But I think that was the point for me that really taught me that actually, yeah, wrestling could be totally different things and still be worthwhile and entertaining and enjoyable. And the other thing that I think was confusing for people was it was very much a wrestling match in the kind of Japanese culture, but featuring two Western wrestlers. So what people saw when they saw that pop up on YouTube or Daily Motion or wherever was a couple of, you know, like Western dudes wrestling in a completely different style from what they were expecting. Whereas for that Japanese crowd, that was just a great match. You know?
What is amazing about Ospreay and Ricochet is that they're still, without all of that, they're still incredibly proficient wrestlers. And case in point was that after that match blew up, I think maybe a few months later at WCPW, which was the What Culture Wrestling Show. Weirdly, we are the outside Xbox to What Culture.
Yeah,
is our story essentially. They the other lads are. I'm the fifth Beatle. I turned up late. They booked them both to have this one-on-one match, and it started out in almost like, oh, this is the sequel to that match, bouncing off the ropes. Within 5 minutes of the match, the rope broke.
Oh, wow.
And you go, oh, and everybody kind of went, like, we all kind of took a breath, and there were people everywhere that went, ah, good luck now, dickheads. And they, with a rope missing, they still assembled a very different but excellent wrestling match. And if anything, it was a blessing that the rope broke, because it got them to go, all right, we'll do something else. And on the fly, they put on this hell of a match. But it was all because of that incredible match in Japan. Andy, when we talked about Ricochet there, we mentioned like main roster of Raw, and then I heard you mutter regrettably. are you keeping up with the main product at the moment? And obviously Ricochet he's not having the best of times, it seems, is he? It's hard to tell.
Yeah, he's not, but I don't really watch the main roster product anymore, just because it's so hard to in the UK. I used to be a network subscriber. I was like, oh great, I can watch the wrestling as it goes out. And then I found out I had to wait a month to watch Raw and SmackDown on the network. And I was like, well, I'm not doing that. That's a waste of time. But then that's how I discovered NXT, because that was a promotion that I could watch as it went out. And I got really, really into NXT, and that's where I discovered Ricochet. Absolutely love Ricochet. I think he's great. I think he's incredibly talented. I did see some of his stuff after he went up to the main roster, and it just seemed like, again, they didn't really know what to do with him, where he fits, and it just feels a bit like his potential's being squandered.
There's such an odd disconnect right now between NXT, essentially the developmental brand. And I know people will argue that it's more than that, but that's kind of what it was there for, was to give the people the training and this energy and this edge and this character before going to Raw or SmackDown. And what seems to happen now is you'll have these amazing characters developed on NXT. They'll get called up where the writers on Raw and SmackDown will go, make him a bin man. you can do a fly. We'll give you wings. It's like, no, you've missed all of it. You've missed all of it.
And, the work's been done.
Work's just there for you. There's a ready-made character for you. And it's like, so are you still keeping up with NXT now?
Well, again, they changed it on the network, so you couldn't watch NXT as it went out anymore. It's delayed by something like 5 or 6 days now. So no, not really keeping up on NXT these days anymore either, which is a real shame. Because, I mean, the next match I want to talk about, actually.
Let's roll into it, because it is an NXT match, the next one, isn't it?
It is an NXT match, yeah. So it's the Halftime Heat show from a few years ago, which was a show that they put out during the halftime of the Super Bowl. So it's like something, if you didn't want to watch the Super Bowl halftime show, you could flip over and there was like a 26 minute wrestling match that you could watch. And it was six of the biggest stars of NXT at the time. And this was the period during which I was most into NXT. So it's a match that encompasses most of the performers who I really enjoyed watching at that time. And again, it's another one of these matches that you can show to people to try and convince them why pro wrestling is good, but a different kind of that. So instead of being based around the kind of the storytelling and that stuff, this is just an absolute spot fest, this match. It's six. So the six wrestlers are Alistair, now Malakai Black, Ricochet, Johnny Gargano, Tommaso Ciampa, Adam Cole, and Velveteen Dream. So perhaps Velveteen Dream is the odd one out in terms of like experience and work rate and stuff, but the other five are basically the best, most proficient wrestlers they've had through NXT in years. And they're all just operating at the very highest level. They recorded it in the Performance Center. So most of the audience are also professional wrestlers. So they know how to react to things and you know, when to cheer and when to boo, which I think really helps the performance of the wrestlers in the ring. And it's just 26 minutes of absolutely outrageous pro wrestling, just high spots. Adam Cole did the first Canadian Destroyer I'd seen in the WWE for ages. He did a Panama Sunrise, and I was like, whoa, I didn't think you were allowed to do those. But yeah, apparently from then on out, now everyone does them all the time. But you know, at that point I was like, wow, okay, bringing out the big guns.
That goes back to that move goes back to the talk about cooperation though, right? You know, like, that is a move that requires so much cooperation on the part of the person who's having it done to them. I love that match, because it's like, it's just bodies flying into the ring from all angles constantly.
Yeah. It's just relentless and nonstop. Shawn Michaels is on the commentary for it, and he's surprisingly good at commentary. But yeah, I wanted to include an Adam Cole match, because Adam Cole is my favorite wrestler to watch in the ring. He's just so good in the ring. He's so good to watch. He's so smooth, so competent, so watchable. But I don't really get to watch a lot of his stuff nowadays, because I generally just watch AEW, because I can watch that when it goes out live.
That's a big point, isn't it? Is the fact that it's making it accessible. And if you don't have the network or something that vaguely resembles it, and you don't want to go down the illegal route, it is, you know, I guess BT Sport would have it, but that involves, you know.
See, I'm not a fan of literally any other sports. I don't like any other sports. So I'm not going to get a sports subscription just to watch wrestling. But the WWE have made it so hard for me to watch their product when it goes out that, I mean, it was becoming harder and harder to ignore the fact that they didn't really care about me as a consumer of their products, which I know sounds like entitled, but I was like, I mean, if I can't watch this stuff as and when it goes out, then maybe I'll just watch the other thing. And that's what I do currently.
Fortunately, the other thing's really good. So
yeah.
And that's, we'll get to that with your third and final match in a short while. But that match, that six man, that blistering halftime heat six man came out of the Performance Center where WWE spent the majority of the last year and a half, you know, because of that thing that's been around. How have you guys sort of kept everything ticking over during the last 18 months? Because there's always stories on how, especially with channels, which, you know, which have a captive audience more so than ever, but the process can change. How have you guys managed to keep ticking over?
Yeah, it's been tough, actually. It took a lot of sort of learning and adapting and things like that. We've, you know, done a lot more recording remotely, you know, Zoom calls, things like that. And I think we do miss being in the studio, and we're sort of hoping to get back in the studio fairly soon, actually. So that'll be a real relief. But we had to adapt and learn a lot of sort of technical things. But I think we've still managed to make good stuff over the last 18 months, hopefully. And we do things like live stream Jackbox games, which are sort of like party games, basically. And they work really, really well as a live stream thing. So, yeah, we did have to adapt and change and learn a lot about live streaming and, you know, remote recording and things like that. But, you know, a lot of the time for stuff like, you know, if we're playing a game together, you might not even know the difference in terms of whether we're sitting in the same room or not, because, you know, we've got good quality audio and we've, you know, we're all playing it together and we've got ways to stream it across to each other while we're recording and things like that. So yeah, it's not been too bad. But yeah, we're desperate to get back in the same room together. And
yeah, I do still think like stuff that we record in person is better, but obviously, you know, you need to wait until it's safe. So hopefully soon we'll be able to do that again. But yeah, even like the Dungeons and Dragons stuff that we do, that's quite a big part of our non-video game offering. We've actually adapted that to a kind of live streaming kind of format pretty well, I think. So I think we've done the best with the hand that we were dealt. And yeah, there's some stuff over the past sort of year and a half that I'm really proud of as well. So it's, yeah, it's kind of forced us to adapt and learn new skills, as Mike says.
Away from the channel, Andrew, what sort of stuff have you done to keep you mentally sane when it's not Xbox or Inside Xbox related? What sort of stuff have you been doing?
What a great question. Well, I've trying to keep busy is like important. I started volunteering at a vaccine center near me, not vaccinating, but just sort of like showing people where to go to get their vaccines, which you know, made me feel like I was helping in some tiny minuscule way. So that was good. But yeah, also just like trying to stay healthy and fit and getting out and doing exercise and stuff like that. I've found that a real struggle at the start of lockdown, but got really back into it recently, which I think is an enormous help, actually. So yeah, that's been a big thing for me.
Same to you, Mike. What have you been doing?
Well, it's things like I'm a big motorsport fan, and obviously I've enjoyed wrestling stuff over the last year as well. And I think it's those things that are sort of separate from the day job and different from video games that are the sort of thing that give you a bit of a mental break. I think, like a lot of people, you know, when lockdown first started, I kind of saw it as an opportunity to do a bunch of stuff. And I probably burned myself out a little bit trying to do kind of extracurricular things and stuff like that. And I think as we've sort of settled into the rhythm, yeah, it's been much more about getting outside regularly and getting some exercise and generally, you know, a bit of headspace and things. So, but yeah, you know, I think those big events, like for example, the Royal Rumble and Mania and things like that are sort of markers of time when there are not many markers of time at the moment. So yeah, it's been nice to have things like, you know, wrestling to watch and those big pay-per-view events to kind of hang it around and look forward to.
You yourself are a race car driver as of 2018.
Yeah, occasionally.
Occasionally. All this old thing. I mean, it's amazing that it's like I say, it was something that you're up. A hobby of yours that you now do. Are there plans soon to get back out on the track?
I'd love to. Yeah, I'd really love to. I've sort of been waiting until it gets safe again. I actually do have a somewhat wrestling adjacent story. to my race car stuff if you're interested. I
did you meet Bob Sparkplug Holly?
I did not meet Bob Sparkplug Holly, unfortunately.
Are you a voice actor for Crush Hour?
I'm not a voice actor for WWE Crush Hour.
Damn it.
No. What was funny was so my first race weekend was back in 2018.
And your car was crushed by Stone Cold Steve Austin in his truck.
Yeah, it ran over in his beer truck.
Hit by a Zamboni.
But we were at I was at a press event for a game called The Crew 2. And another person who was at that press event was Simon Miller, who I'm sure your listeners are familiar with.
I like the work of Simon Miller.
And I was chatting to him about the race driving thing, and he was chatting to me about his journey as a professional wrestler. And it turned out that our sort of debuts were on the same weekend. So my races were on the Saturday.
And the invites got mixed up, and you were in the wrestling ring. And Simon Miller was behind the wheel of the car.
That's a
Simon Miller would
conflict.
Not fit into my race car. I guarantee Simon Miller would not fit in my race car.
Those
anyway,
traps,
so we had this little deal that he was in a Royal Rumble and I was in a race, and we had this deal that without mentioning it to anyone, we'd just tweet each other our finishing position. So there's a couple of tweets, if you look back through the archives, of me tweeting Simon Miller my race finishing position and him tweeting me his Rumble finishing position. But it was
great
better? Because it was the two
of
us
kind
of achieving a lifelong dream.
Who got the higher position?
I think he may have done better, actually. He may have done better. But it was us achieving our like lifelong dreams at the same time and
so
after
cool.
a ton of work. And so it was a really nice moment of synchronicity.
I remember the Rumble in question. It was for Defiant Wrestling, and the pop that Simon Miller got when he entered the Rumble. Like, this is a Rumble, like with Defiant Wrestling and WCPW, they spent a lot of money getting a lot of people from all around the world. I think Simon Miller got the biggest pop of the night. It's just funny how it works like that. You'll spend all this money trying to bring in these big names. Well, Simon Miller, there you go.
I'm sure the big names loved it as well, didn't they?
I think in general, like the What Culture Pro Wrestling experiment confused a lot of people when you had like Jack the Jobber and Adam Pacitti having longer autograph lines than Bret Hart, and people like, why is what? It's just like the multiverse. I don't understand why this.
It does still give me a little thrill when I see a sign in the wrestling audience like referring to Simon Miller.
Yeah, it's so cool.
I know that
it's
guy.
So cool. Yeah,
little golden up sign.
Yeah. He is a lovely, lovely dude. Like, it's not a work. He is like actually a genuinely nice guy. We love him to bits. He's a great friend. So it's great to see him doing well. And he's, you know, like everyone, I think getting back into the swing of things post pandemic and getting back in the ring and getting ready to go again.
Amazing. Well, I filled my quota for mentioning What Culture this month. So
sorry.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Your final match, Mike, what's it going to be?
Well, so this is another match from the Royal Rumble, which I would say is my favorite pay-per-view, but this is the Rumble in 2017. It's Styles and Cena, basically. It's it wasn't a match I was necessarily expecting to love as much as I did. I love AJ Styles. I think he's a brilliant, brilliant wrestler. Really, really like him. Cena, I was less bothered about, less interested. He came from a kind of era where I'd sort of fallen out of wrestling, out of love with it a little bit, because I felt like after the kind of chaos of the Attitude Era and those really big personalities, I feel like in the sort of early to mid 2000s, I guess, it became quite funneled into a bunch of guys who all wore black pants and all, you know, had kind of normal names. They didn't have any, like, much in the way of gimmicks, and they were all just massive, basically. And a lot of that, I just kind of disconnected with it a little bit. And I feel like Cena, perhaps unfairly, I kind of lumped him in with those guys. But this match in the Rumble in 2017, from the moment they both step out, you can tell they are both so, so up for it. The energy level, even just walking down the ramp, is off the charts. And when they get in the ring, it's two guys operating at the absolute top of their game. And I know there's a lot of talk about how Cena kind of calls matches and stuff, but I doubt AJ needs that kind of help or that kind of guidance. So I think it's just two great wrestlers, like, singing from the same hymn sheet. Brilliant match. I don't think they ever leave the ring. They never, like, actually set foot outside the ring. It all is contained within the squared circle. But it's full of so many awesome spots. It's not like over the top with spots, but there's some really, really nice stuff in there. Some great reversals. And I think, I may be misremembering this, but I think it was also the first time anyone had ever kicked out of the Styles Clash or thereabouts. So for a long time, like AJ's first year in WWE, they were really respectful of that as a move. And, like, no one ever kicked out of it. If he managed to get it locked in and managed to do it. And I think Cena was, like, the first one to sort of kick out of it. And there's obviously a lot of nice storyline running into it as well. Historical storyline in terms of it's Cena matching Ric Flair's record for the number of, times as WWE champion. He actually puts the figure four leg lock on at one point as a kind of, like, nod to that stuff. So it's a more conventional match than the other two that I've picked. But I think, you know, if you're talking about, like, what I feel like WWE, like, ought to be delivering, like, that's it. That's the match.
And I feel like it comes off the back of, like, a Cena and Styles feud through the previous year, which saw AJ Styles getting one up on John Cena. And you don't see it very often when it does happen. Absolutely, like, Styles beat Cena clean as a whistle the SummerSlam before, and then Cena vanished. And then this was sort of the comeback, and it led to, I remember the one thing that sticks out to me is the finish of that, where because AJ had been kicking out of AA's forever.
Left, right, and center.
Yeah. I seem to remember that John Cena had to double down on it, and he hit an AA, held onto his hand, hoist him back up on his shoulders, stared straight down the camera like he was going to kill everybody on the other side of it, did another AA, and that was it. And I was like, that was cool. Yep. I like that. That's nice. A nice bit of finish to that one. But yeah, littered with this one. Do you remember this one, Andy?
I don't actually remember this one. I did go back and watch it after Mike told me it was going to be one of his matches. And yeah, like he says, this is the epitome of the WWE style of wrestling, which I know, like, a lot of people are like, well, you know, it's a very kind of PG, safe, kind of, like, not very interesting style of wrestling. But when it's done to the highest level by two world-class performers, it's, you know, there's nothing else like it. It's just very, very good professional wrestling.
You can still work within the lines and make something excellent, can't you?
Exactly.
That's what really appeals to me about it.
As I understand it, Cena is one of these wrestlers who can just call an entire match in the ring. Like, they don't plan anything, and he'll go in and they'll be, like, reacting to the way that the crowd is reacting to the match, which, I don't know, sounds like alchemy to me. But apparently he can do it, and he's a master of it, which is, you know, a kind of a lost art these days, I think.
I think it's cool when you watch Cena walk back up the ramp at the end of that match, you can tell he knows it was an absolute barnstormer. Like, you can just see, kind of, like, there's something real in the way he kind of looks back at the ring, and he's sort of, yeah, he's like, that was an absolute classic. I don't know whether it was, like, a, you know, a Meltzer special or anything, but for me, that was a real, it was a real reminder of what, when WWE does what it does well, it can be. Yeah, absolutely brilliant. And I became a much more of a fan of Cena after that point.
Because you said yourself that you kind of lumped him in with a lot of people who you thought were the detriment of wrestling. And and you're not the only one either.
And I think he does get a bit of stick, doesn't he? But But yeah, after that match, I was like, you know what? I would call myself a Cena fan now. I still think he's the most bizarrely shaped human being on the planet, but he's an amazing wrestler and clearly a pretty cool guy as well.
I'm surprised you haven't bumped into him on any like the media junket tours and stuff, because I feel like he's, if he's not in a wrestler ring, he's forever on a media tour. Like this never-ending media tour.
I don't think we're big enough media. If we were Good Morning America, he'd be coming.
Yeah, he'd be interested. Yeah, yeah. But
he's top tier.
That was the cool thing about that junket that we were at SummerSlam was I was able to say to AJ Styles that match with Cena was like top tier. It was so good, and it was nice to be able to tell him that in person. And actually, one of the quite cool things, again, like a weird sort of nice little surprise, was that when they did the wrestling game that year, the WWE game. They did like a sort of special Scene Enough edition. And one of the things in there is a little scrap of the canvas from that very event and from that very match. Nice. So actually, like, weirdly, just by complete chance, one of my favorite matches of all time, I actually have a scrap of the ring canvas in my home, which is quite cool.
There's probably some John Cena sweat in that.
Yeah. I could probably clone him and get some DNA. An army of giant upper body, you know, like super soldiers.
Do you have any wrestling memorabilia, Andy?
Do I have any wrestling memorabilia?
I've seen the Brody Lee t-shirt on the camera, so there's
I've got tons of t-shirts. Yeah. Loads of t-shirts, but in terms of actual memorabilia, no, I don't think I do really. Like, I go to events and I see those like $800 replica belts and I'm like, that's not really for me.
What I do and buy the 30 quid like child's like kids toy version. It doesn't fit around a human waist.
Yeah,
I've got the US Championship one.
Yes,
I will say I was at C2E2, which is the Comic Con in Chicago last year, and they had the AEW action figures. It was just before they came out, but they had a like display case full of them, and those are some cool action figures. They look really good, really realistic, and really well made. So I don't know. I was kind of eyeing those up, but then the pandemic happened, so I didn't get any.
But it nicely brings us to AEW. Your final match, Andrew, it is an AEW match, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I couldn't not have an AEW match because it's all I've been watching for like the past 2 years. And I really like it. Love watching Dynamite every week. I get all the pay-per-views. And the match that I've chosen is the Hangman, Adam Page and Kenny Omega versus the Young Bucks tag team title match from Revolution last year, which was one of the best wrestling matches I've ever seen. And also, I think there's a kind of a personal thing in that it's the last wrestling event that I went to in person before the pandemic and before everything shut down. So I've got kind of residual fondness for it because of that, actually being there in a crowd full of wrestling fans watching wrestling, which is, you know, one of my favorite things to do. But yeah, it's an absolutely phenomenal match. I mean, the in-ring stuff obviously is great. They're all very talented professional wrestlers. I'm not telling anyone anything new there. But I think the story of this match is one of the more kind of complex and nuanced stories I've ever seen in professional wrestling. So if you're unaware of what the situation is, like these four wrestlers, the Young Bucks, Matt and Nick Jackson, Kenny Omega, and Adam Page, they were all together as part of the Bullet Club in Japan. They were all kind of regulars on the YouTube show Being the Elite. They were a kind of a four person like core unit before AEW was set up. And then AEW gets set up and Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks are all named as executive vice presidents of the company, but Adam Page isn't, crucially. And then they've got this storyline of Page sort of questioning himself and his own abilities because his friends are kind of succeeding above what he is. He lost the first ever world championship match to Chris Jericho, which knocked his confidence. And then they've got this storyline where he's starting to drink more and his friends are concerned about him. But then him and Kenny Omega managed to capture the tag titles because they are undeniably excellent professional wrestlers. But the Young Bucks, their whole thing is tag team wrestling, and they're jealous that they, as a tag team, can't win these titles that their friends who aren't a tag team have won. So you've got this incredibly nuanced situation where you've got people who should be happy for their friends, but they can't because they have professional jealousy of them. And
gosh, Kenny's getting frustrated with Hangman Adam Page as well at the same time. So there's tension within there. It's such a good story, Andy. And I rewatched this match when you mentioned it. And what I love about it is that the storytelling is happening in the ring as well. I've never seen more sort of like narrative beats within a match ever.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Matt Jackson gives a kind of condescending handshake offer to Adam Page. Adam Page spits in his face. You've got Kenny Omega being literally pulled in two directions by the Young Bucks and by Page. You've got Omega unable to do his finishing move, so Hangman does it for him. He hits the one-winged angel on one of the Young Bucks. Yeah, and I think the Young Bucks are better as heels, I think, anyway. I think they're an incredible heel team. And they weren't officially heels at this point, but in this storyline, to me, they absolutely are, because they are having all this success and they want more and more and more. They want to be the tag champions as well. And all Adam Page has at this point is the tag team titles. And they can't see that because they just have this tunnel vision on the titles. And they just think that he's being completely unreasonable. He thinks that they're being unreasonable. Kenny Omega's like, I don't know. I'm in the middle of all this. It's honestly one of the most like clever and nuanced stories I've seen in like any kind of fiction. You know, I don't think you get these kinds of stories examining these kinds of relationships where friends are succeeding above other friends and they're sort of like struggling to deal with that, and how does it affect the relationship? And yeah, it's just an incredibly well done story that happens to also be a professional wrestling match.
A really good professional wrestling match.
Yeah, and the wrestling is great, and they're going like people are doing buckshot lariats on the ramp, and you know, all sorts. And then Hangman buckshot lariats both bucks, gets the pin himself, basically wins the match himself at the end, and then they're all like tussling over Kenny, and oh man, it was great, and actually.
Right at the end, he looks like he's sizing up Kenny for a buckshot lariat as well. You see at the end of the match, he goes up to the ropes and he's holding onto it and he thinks about it. And it's like, wow. And then they don't do it. And it's like you're saying, Andy, it's that level of restraint, right? Like the big story moment in any other wrestling match would be that he, you know, at the end of the match, he betrays his tag team partner by hitting with a buckshot lariat. In this, they have him think about it and then he doesn't do it. And then they hug and they walk up the ramp together. It's like, it's those little differences that I think are really cool.
But it's a storyline that's still going on because it's feeding into the current championship picture in AEW, because they're building to Kenny Omega versus Hangman Page, because now Omega has gone full heel and he's joined the kind of jerk-ass elite or whatever they call it. I don't know what they're called now. But yeah, and so you've got this kind of this redemptive arc where it's now very clear who the face and the heel are in this dynamic, but it's still feeding off that insecurity that Paige had from the situation that he was in at Revolution like over a year ago.
Incredible. And this is one of the things that I think AEW stands out for. But for yourself, Andy, like access aside, obviously because WWE is trickier to watch over here than AEW, what is it about AEW that just makes it hit better?
I feel like they just let people be themselves more, which I mean... it just has more of a genuine feel to me. It's like wrestlers will sink or swim based on not only their abilities, but also their, you know, how they connect with a crowd on their own terms, which I think is the best way to do it. Whereas in WWE, where you're being told to do what to do by a team of writers, you have certain restrictions on what you can do in the ring. I think that's a lot more limiting. So it just feels more genuine and more like people are being allowed to do what they want to do. Plus, I mean, the in-ring stuff is great. Everyone there is just a really good worker, generally, from what I've seen. And, you know, storylines that actually pay off. You know, they set things up and then they pay off. What a concept. But it's, it's something that I no longer take for granted.
Yeah, they do play to the audience far better than WWE, and it's something we talk about a lot, and I don't like talking about it because I want everyone to be good. I want everyone to do well. Like there is this thing of you just like bashing WWE. No, I don't want to. I want to be able to celebrate how great Raw is on a weekly basis, but they're so far removed from everything at the moment, and they're making money despite themselves. So I don't know when that will change. But AEW, you get that sense of urgency because they are, whilst they are are a well-funded company. They've not got coffers as deep as WWE, to the point where if they had Randy Orton blowing his nose for 3 hours on Raw, the show would still make bank. Like, there is still that. And you know, WWE is a brand name. You know, it's mm-hmm. You know, when people talk about wrestling, they'd say WWE when they may mean AEW, in the same way that when we ask for a vacuum cleaner, we ask for a Hoover. It's that. And that embedded mentality, they've got all of that going for them, and they can just coast. But AEW has that urgency I feel like
probably, I don't want to, you know, put words in people's mouths, but I feel like probably Vince still sees sort of AEW as at that level of NXT. And you know, they were obviously pitted against each other on Wednesday nights, and I guess Vince got his nose bloodied a bit by that matchup, but I think he still sees AEW as only a threat to NXT. And actually, I think he needs to be more worried. And I think the point when WWE will step their game up again is when the AEW starts creeping towards, like, you know, taking money away from the main show, the main roster and stuff.
Taking eyes and cash there.
Yeah, I think I do really like AEW, but if I were to name my like favorite promotion and era of recent professional wrestling, it's that NXT era, like 2017, 2018.
It was so good.
It was great. All the takeovers
were incredible,
fantastic. Yeah, that was the same era. I did manage to get out to the Performance Center for a press trip. It was one that Adam Pacitti was on as well, and it was like Disneyland or something. I was like, every, you know, all the people I watched on TV every week, that I was like, I got a selfie with Otis. I saw Rick Boogs doing promo practice in the green screen room. Got to talk to Matt Bloom, you know, head trainer over there. And I was like, oh man, what a day. What a time for professional wrestling that was. But yeah, NXT in that era, like Ciampa and Gargano and, you know, Adam Cole.
And without that pressure, they succeeded, because it was, as soon as it went up against AEW, it was like, right, we need to make this a weekly program where we need things to happen quickly. Come on, let's go. And when NXT was just left just to exist and do its own thing, it drew eyes. But then as soon as more eyes were looking at it, then the bigger boys get involved and have to mess with it. That's why that era is so special.
They were leeching the talent. They were leeching the talent away from NXT for the main roster as well. And then like leaving these people to just wither on the vine, you know, because they already had more people than they knew what to do with.
Yeah. They don't have anything for them, but they don't want NXT having them either.
Yeah.
So, this is odd. But also, like, those old NXT shows used to be an hour long, which is a great length of time for a professional wrestling TV show.
Isn't it just, we do a Raw review on the podcast feed where we, thankfully not the latest ones, but we've been watching them from like 1993 onwards, and like Raw in 93, lads, 43 minutes long.
Perfect.
Oh, really?
What a treat.
It's 3 hours now?
Sad hours now.
3 hours.
But 43 minutes. I can.
That's
I'm
like, that's like
all
Hamlet.
About that. Yeah. Hamlet every week.
Yeah. But, it's not necessary.
You're right. It really isn't. It really isn't. So, outside Xbox, looking ahead, what have we guys got coming up on the channel that you want to shout about? Anything? Because we're getting to a point now where we're sort of coming back. The world's getting back to normal. Have you guys got anything special planned?
I think just our return to the studio, as we said, we've sort of been planning that as the world opens up again. So I think that will, I think you'll see an explosion of sort of kind of different
in-person content.
Yeah, in-person stuff, which I think, as Andy says, does have its own like atmosphere and vibe that I think people are really going to get a kick out of. We're going to get a kick out of mucking around in the same room together as well. So that's the thing, really. I wouldn't like to promise a specific video or whatever. Just come and check it out if you like video games, and you know, we have a lot of fun making it.
Or Dungeons & Dragons. And hopefully we'll be able, that's what I'm most looking forward to, is doing a live D&D show again, because those are great, and we haven't done them for too long now.
So where can people find you online then? Do all the plugs.
All right. We're at youtube.com/outsidexbox. We're also on Twitter, Outside Xbox, Instagram, Outside Xbox Official. We have a sister channel called Outside Extra, which covers things other than Xbox and, you know, does various other bits and bobs, and they're great as well. So
If you want to check out our D&D, you can search Ox Venture on YouTube and check those videos out as well.
And we have a bunch of wrestling videos on Outside Xbox as well. So if you want a starting point as a wrestling fan, we did that video that Andy was talking about where we talked to wrestlers about their favorite wrestling video games. It's really interesting. It's lots of fun stuff in there. So yeah, we love wrestling. We love wrestling games. So if that's your entry point, then enjoy.
Then a playthrough of Raw 2.
Yep, that's
one
coming.
One day, Tom.
We were going to keep it a surprise, but yeah.
Yes! Do it.
Can't wait to see John's Cena.
John Cena.
Cena.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.